And the kids are coming. And mother asks, how is it? And they say, you know, Mom, it's just so great, you know, the way you used that blender. It was just, we were so amazed, you know, like that. And another one of the children point out, says, yeah, and you know, the way you handle the spoons and, you know, stirring that, you got the fires just right and all, you know. And so like this, you know, they throw in different elements like this, you know. And the husband says, yeah, you know, you cut the vegetables, you didn't cut your finger off. You know, I mean, that's great. You know, I cut my finger off. But, you know, I mean, you know, you did that. It's so great. Now, would she be satisfied? No. Why? Because the whole point of the meal is not the technique in which you get it. It's the interaction based on this. So that's the point. Administration, business, all these different things, that's not what human society is about. Right? That's what animal society is about. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Because when you get money, that's what you do with it. Right? You have to do those things, so you need money. Human society is based on the interaction between the individuals centered around Krishna consciousness. If it's just the interaction without God, it's still animal. Nicer animal. Mode of goodness animal. You know, deers and cows and like that. But it's the interaction based on Krishna consciousness that makes it special. So that's what they're pointing out, is that Prithu Maharaj is special because of his mood, his compassion towards the citizens, his mercy. Therefore, because of that, he does all that nicely. Right? Going back to our original example, the mom is using all those kitchen utensils very nicely because of the affection for the family. If she's in a situation where she doesn't have affection, doesn't really want to cook, she doesn't use them so expertly. It's mood. We miss the point. Now, this mood is not just bhav. This is not just some, you know, express whatever you feel like and this is the real thing. No, this is that the mood in relationship to the Lord and the devotees. It's made very clear. This whole chapter, you know, now we're on verse 50, so it's not a small chapter. And all it's been talking about is Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Brahmins and Vaishnavas. That's all it's been talking about. So when that's in place, then everything works very nicely. Right? It works very good. So they're bringing this element out, because otherwise, unless it's brought out, the sense of control and the sense of the desire for enjoyment or the attachment of the living entity is so prominent in the material consciousness that there's no focus on the real point, right? Facilities, you have facilities. What do you do with the facilities, right? People say, oh, if you have facilities, everything must be fine. But fine means you're able to use those facilities in God-conscious relationships. Then it has meaning. Otherwise, having facility, you know, ants get facility. They all go out, collect something, they build them. I mean, they're very expert. You can't say that it's not organized. You want an organization, check out how bees and ants work. Very organized, right? An amazing thing, they do it without a committee. I don't know how, but somehow or another. So then the point is it's important. That's why there's training, right? In education, one is trained in an occupation because it's important, right? You must have skills. You must be expert because you're part of a society. You have to add something to the society, right? But that's not the point, right? You know, it's like, what is it? Having a, what is it, downstairs, advertisement for the flea market and prasad. like that. I never quite understood is, I mean, most people are trying to get rid of fleas, you know, so I'm saying is, you know, like that. Unless that's why it's called a flea market, because it's all the stuff you want to get rid of, right? There's something, whatever. So, and prasad, so then the idea is everyone brings something. So if everyone just brings something and there's no interaction, then everyone will be satisfied? No, it's the interaction. So the facilities are for the interaction. So the king does his duties, the Vaishyas, the Shudras, the Brahmins do their duties. Then the whole society can interact very nicely on Krishna conscious relationships. That's the point. So this is where it applies in occupation. You know, in chanting the holy name, then it's remembering the Lord. Not that you're just making the syllables happen. That's very good. But the real point is remembering, or hearing the name, understanding it's non-different. You're rendering devotional service, that the technique is going well, you're getting results, that's good. But more important is the devotional mood is there. Devotional mood is not there, then even though it's expertly executed, it's not as pleasing to Krishna as if the mood is better. We always have to be able to make this distinction between the attitude and the technique. They're non-different, but at the same time, they're different. If you can't tell both, you're not fully knowledgeable in the subject. If you can tell what's the same, that's good. If you can tell what's different, that's nice. But when you can tell both of them, then you actually understand. And you also have to know the priority. What is first, what's second? Right? So that's it. It means that it's service is more important than the technique. So that means the devotion that creates it as service is more important than the expertise of performing the activity. But the point is if you have devotion, you want to do it nicely for Krishna. That means your expert technique. Does that make sense? But to think that the technique is everything and that's what's going to make everything work, that's for the uninformed. Right? That's for the uninformed. We think it just everything is mechanically going well, now everything will be perfect. The reason that things aren't going nice is mechanically they're not going well. Not really, it's the attitude. Because the attitude defines whether you think the devotion is more important or the technique is more important. If someone is emphasizing the technique, means that their understanding of the devotional process is not that strong. They can't discriminate what's devotional service or not. And so then since they can't discriminate, since a living entity has intelligence and will discriminate, now what will you do? You don't know what it is, so that means it's not based on scripture. That means it will be whimsical, which means it'll be the mode of ignorance. So that means in your devotional service is mixed with the mode of ignorance, though it's very expert. Right? It means all these things happen at once, right? The cow, the body of the cow is controlled by the mode of goodness. The living entity itself is under the mode of ignorance. That's why they're an animal, right? So these two very conflicting things are happening. Someone can be very expert, but completely miss the point, or partially miss the point. Right? This is what we have to be able to discern, that you know that the Varnashram is in support of the devotional service. It's not that it is devotional service. It becomes a part of devotional service, but it never is devotional service. Right? That's the whole point. Chanting the holy name is devotional service. Right? Getting up in the morning, taking a bath, brushing your teeth so you're semi-human, so that we might more have an opportunity to act as one, and therefore chant, then it becomes a part of bhakti. Right? So it's different, but when it's connected, it's the same. Right? So when it's connected, we make no distinction. But when it's not connected, we make a great distinction. It's useless. Right? Roma Harshana Sutta is a Sutta. Right? That means he's of low birth. But he's engaged in the glorification of the Lord, speaking of the Shastras, and he's very expert in it. So expert that Vyasadeva has given him charge of the Puranas. In fact, if you check all the Puranas, every Purana says Sutta Uvacha. That means all 18 Puranas are spoken by Sutta. You know, so that's no small accomplishment. And if we notice, it doesn't. He doesn't, when he sits down and they ask him about something, he doesn't say, let me refer to my notes, right? All those, you know, verses, hundreds of thousands of verses, he knows, right? 18,000 verses, Bhagavatam, Skanda Puranas, 100,000. He knows them all, right? And not only that, Mahabharata's 100,000. His son's speaking that one. Right? They know all these things. So very qualified. And the Brahmins are respecting that. They're not worried about his low birth. But as soon as he doesn't respect Balaram, right? Because remember, what's a sutta? Sutta is a combination between a Kshatriya father and a Brahmin mother. So the inclination could be either Brahminical activities, Kshatriya activities, or Shudra activities, right? So now, there's the element of the prestige and at the same time the knowledge. So now he's applied prestige into knowledge. So the prestige is a lower level, right? Of all the, endeavor for prestige is considered the lowest, lower than money and other things, right? Sense gratification. Prestige is considered the lowest because from that you have to have money and you have to have facility, right? So, therefore, that's why it's the mix. So he's adding prestige to the Brahminical standard, which is not necessary. Right? So when Balaram comes, then he thinks, no, I am giving the class, I'm on the Vyasasana, and according to the rules, the person on the Vyasasana doesn't have to stand up. Which is true, right? Unless, of course, God walks in. Right? You know, anyone else walks in. Apply the rule, but when God walks in, you might want to reconsider. So he didn't. So then Balaram killed him. And immediately all the Brahmins who the moment before didn't care about his low birth and that are saying, well, what do you expect? He's low born, you know? So, you know, hey, he does these things. It happens, right? Does that make sense? So the point is when the prominence is there, the real prominence is there. No one worries about the ideal of the secondary and other supporting elements. But if the primary element of devotion is not there, then no matter how expert one is, it's basically useless. That's the point. So the whole point comes down to devotional service is what's value. Anything else only has its value in connection with Krishna. It has no value separately. Remember, if we feel that it has value on our own, that is our conditioned nature speaking. The particular modes we're under, so what we're attached to, what we're attracted to, that is what is what we value, right? It's our external identity. So we take, you know, whatever it is our field, that's what's important, right? It means if you sit down with a group of devotees, right, you know, in popular discussion, you know, how to make everything in the world, you know, work properly, right? Then someone's going to talk about, you know, recognizing the individual and, you know, when it gets more personal. Someone else is going to, we need some serious management here, we need some like this. Someone else is going to say, no, it's without knowledge, nothing's going to happen. The other one is, you know, if you don't have money, you can't do anything like that. Do we recognize what's going on here? It's just the conditioned natures. All are correct, but at the same time, all are wrong. Because the only thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says is short in this world is Krishna consciousness. Expertise, there's billions of people that are expert. Like that. Generally, everybody's expert in something. Right? So that's not the problem. The problem is understanding that Krishna consciousness is the real primary element. Right? Then another point is being brought up, secondary point here, that Prabhupada's mentioning the livelihood, but he's also mentioning what they're adding to society, that they have the right to take their livelihood. Does that make sense? That's very important, because if you don't give the one, what's your right to take the other? If I give you no goods, how can I take money? Right? That's what society means. There's something you're adding and they're adding. So everybody adds something. So it says here is that the Brahmin should live by spreading knowledge and should therefore take contributions. Right? So because knowledge is being cultivated and spread, therefore contributions. Right? Whereas a king should give protection. If he's not giving protection, then, you know, to the citizens for the development of the highest general, then he can levy taxes. No one minds the tax if they're protected. But if the tax is taken and there's no protection, what's the meaning? You know, just like someone's claiming they're a Brahmin, they should be taken care of, but they're not giving knowledge. Then why would you feel inspired? Right? That's the point. Someone is very Brahminical and adds something, you feel like taking care. Someone's not, you don't. Same with the king. He's protecting, then that's nice. If you look in history, where are the problems? Why do people want independence? Why is there so many revolutions? Because tax is being taken with no protection. That's all. It's not something else. Right? We're not dealing here with, you know, rocket science here. We're dealing with, it's just direct. That people don't feel that they're taking their money because they're not doing the livelihood. It's not the administration, it's the protection. Administration is for protection. That's why they said it's Prithumars' mercy. Therefore, he's performing his duties expertly. Just like we said, it's the mother's affection. Therefore, she's using all the kitchen facilities to make a nice meal. Right? So that's the point. So the preaching also, because of affection, that's why the knowledge is going on. The mercy, the knowledge is going on. It's not knowledge for knowledge's sake. No one's worried, interested in that either. Someone's very scholarly, but is not caring to give that knowledge to others. It's only for their own prestige. That's their payment, right? They're very proud of their knowledge, so they're giving their knowledge so people respect them for that in one's mind. That's the payment. Why you should give money or anything else? Because they're not doing it to benefit you. They're only doing it for the social prestige. But if they're doing it to benefit you, then naturally you reciprocate with something else. Vaishyas, they're providing things useful for the society. Therefore, they can keep a portion of the profit. Right? So they work directly within their area. You see, Brahmins and Kshatriyas, the occupation, the, how you say, the duties and the results are two different things. Right? It's not that you're a tax collector, therefore you keep some of the tax. No, that's a businessman. Right? No, you're protecting, therefore you take tax. You're giving knowledge, therefore contributions. Here, you're working within economics, you're adding something of value, therefore you can keep the profit. Right? And then the Shudra means he is able to assist others in the performance of those duties. And because of that, then they're taken care of. Whatever necessities they require, then they're given. But that means they're doing something of value, right? Not sitting behind a computer doing on Facebook like that and then, you know, 15 minutes a day doing some work. But because everybody's doing that in the office and the boss thinks that was 15 minutes was a full day of work. Like that. Not like that. It means you're adding something of value. Therefore, then these are prospering. You're helping the Vaishyas make profit. Therefore, you're taking care of. You're helping the Kshatriyas in protection. Therefore, you're helping in the body of knowledge. Therefore, you're getting. So you're adding something. Right? It's a real system. It's not theory. Right? If we only approach it from economics, yes, Vaishyas on their own will never understand the system. If you think Varnashram is economics, it won't work. Right? It's a Brahminical system. The Brahminical culture includes everyone because all souls are naturally servants of Krishna and therefore on the platform of Brahman. So the only culture that's universal is the Brahminical culture. Everything else is very specific. So the point is now, therefore, all these areas of expertise, only the devotee can actually be good at it. That's why we see the leading kings in the society and the leading Brahmins that we take the greatest from, their devotees. Right? It means we hear about Durvasa Muni, but the inspiration comes from Narad Muni or, you know, and other great personalities, the four Kumaras. Right? But the great kings who are devotees, right? Others who are expert at king means Duryodhana is good at his job, right? We don't hear any complaints the citizens were dissatisfied. The citizens weren't going to revolt because of his inexpertise at the techniques of administration. No, they would get upset because his mood was wrong towards the Vaishnavas. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to understand is technique means devotion is the primary element, but it has to be expressed through the technique. So that means technique is very important. But in its very importantness, it's not as important as devotional service that is supposed to assist. Questions or comments or something? Yes.
So Maharajji. Hello, hello. You would look at like Vaidhi Bhakti could be considered part of a technique also?
Is Vaidhi Bhakti considered a technique?
Part of a technique.
On one level, one would say, because the Vaidhi Bhakti is addressing the conditioning of the living entity, that he doesn't have his natural, spontaneous affection. So the Vait means, in other words, what activities the soul would naturally perform in his constitutional state, those then are rules are made to require that kind of lifestyle and endeavor, so that you're at least situated how the soul would naturally be, even though the mentality isn't yet. So by following that, one becomes purified, and the idea is with time, naturally the spontaneous element will come up. But without being situated, right? In other words, Mother Jashoda is in Krishna's house, you know, in the kitchen, making arrangements with the servants, doing all those things. So she's engaged in those activities. Now, if someone is, therefore, that's why then the rules are, then the mother is situated there in the house, taking care of the family, making all those things, because that will be the natural expression of those rules. But the particular rules that are applied, some are, according to the transcendental nature of the jiva, you know, like chanting the holy name, worshipping the deity like this, associating with Vaishnavas. But others are according to one's conditioning. So the Vaidhi will apply in one form to brahmacharis, another form to grihasthas, right? But that's simply to address the particular situation, how to, does that make sense? You know, just like some of the gopis are in the kitchen making arrangements for Krishna, and some of them are out in the dining hall serving the prasad. So there's going to be different rules are there, right? You may be quite aggressive with the pots and that, because if you don't, something may burn, boil over. But when you're serving, you're not. But, so it changes according to the situation, but the point of doing something very nicely for Krishna, that remains the same. So the Sarup Lakshana doesn't change.
Then Vaidhi Bhakti could also apply to Varnashram.
Vaidhi means Daiva Varnashram is an Anga of that, but it has to be understood it's only an Anga if it's connected. You know what I'm saying? Like deity worship, whether you are devotional or not, let's say, you know, your pet hamster died. So then you're standing in front of the deities and you're thinking about your hamster, right? You know, you're there, and when everybody moves, you move with them, and, you know, you do all the things that you're supposed to do, but you're not actually there. But it's still devotional service. It's still directly devotional service. But when you're at home and you're, like, you know, putting things and setting up the living room, if you see it in connection to Krishna, then it's devotional service. If you don't, it's not. So in other words, you have direct and indirect devotional service. So the confusion is not in that direct is directly devotional service, and things that aren't direct are, you know, non-devotional. You know, the karmis are living their lifestyle and all those things. They're making their money, they're eating, they're sleeping, they're doing. That then is very clearly material. The problem is when you take all that eating, sleeping, and making money and connect it to Krishna, that's where the confusion comes. Because it's either, oh, it's not devotional service because it's just material activities, or it's devotional service and it doesn't matter my mentality. It's just automatically. I'm a devotee, so automatically everything I do is devotional. Right, it's a fallacy in logic, right? You know, I'm a grihastha. I connected this to Krishna, so therefore, I, as a grihastha, I do these activities. These activities are connected to Krishna, so therefore, I'm automatically connected to Krishna. Yes, but the qualification of that logic is only if the item itself is connected, right? And so I took the family to the temple. It's connected. But when we're sitting at home and, you know, doing other things, you know, the wife's on Facebook, you know, you're looking at something on CNN, the kids are playing with their video game, is there connection? If there is, nice. If there's not, it's not connected. It's one of those things. It's like that. The potato is devotional when it's cooked for Krishna. When it's not, when it's being, you know, served as a side to a Mac burger, it's not devotional. Same potatoes, same process, same cooking. Right? That's where the confusion comes. So here these sages are pointing out that yes, his ability to perform his kingly duties, that's not what's wonderful. It's the devotion. Just like we say with Krishna, being God and creating the universes and doing all these things, that's not what's wonderful. He's God. Of course God does these things. Just like Prithu's a king, of course he does it. What's special is the attitude of devotion, what Krishna has towards the devotees, or the king has towards the citizens. That's what's special. The technique is expected. Expertise is expected. But one shouldn't lose the focus on the proper attitude in gaining the expertise. Does that make sense? So Varnashram is part of the devotional process if it's Daiva Varnashram. But Daiva Varnashram means it's connected. Varnashram is the system. Just like cooking is the method. But when it's connected to Krishna, then you're cooking for Krishna. Right? So Varnashram is the social technique. It's connected to Krishna. It's called Daiva Varnashram. Otherwise, it's asura. Just like cooking, connected to Krishna is devotional. Not connected to Krishna is asura. It's that you know, Krishna in the Gita didn't give the divine demoniac and the guys that don't know actually who they are, right? You know, it's one or the other, right? You know, so like that. Is that okay? Yes. Yeah, just speak loudly means I didn't know myself because I'm so used to these mics, is that unless you speak exactly directly in line with the mic, it doesn't work. If you move a little bit, it doesn't work. And so I was in Europe with someone who actually knows sound, you know, an actual sound technician, not a computer nerd, right? So then I was always adjusting the mic as I move this way, move it. He'd ask, why are you doing that? And I says, otherwise the mic won't work. And he says, no, he says, sound mics, then they work in a direction, 90 degrees, 120, you set them, whatever it is. So they catch the voice wherever it is. They actually make mics like that. But I don't think, except for that devotee, I haven't met one temple that actually knows that. They always buy directional mics that are meant for instruments, right? You know, I have a violin, the sound only comes out of that spot. So you aim the thing right there. Maybe they're cheaper, I don't know. But the point is these mics, unless you speak directly into them, and Prabhupada mentioned this so wonderfully, you have to swallow them to make them work, right? So we see as even Prabhupada wasn't impressed by our so-called technocrats, because they actually don't know what they're talking about when it comes to sound, right? You know, a computer, this, that, yes, but when it comes to sound, sad to say, they buy the wrong mics. And this is an international broadcast. and I hope it's taken to heart around the world.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay.
You have explained and elaborated very nicely on the symptoms, on the characteristics of general human relationships, which basically are divided in Asura Varnashrama, Varnashrama, plain Varnashrama, and Daivi Varnashrama.
Well, plain Varnashrama is the unapplied technique. It's not a separate thing. Means you have Varnashram, means the technique of how to divide human society into these four Varnas and four Ashrams, their identities, their interactions, their duties, their rights, their responsibilities. When you apply it, it's either going to be applied devotionally, so it's Daiva Varnashram, or non-devotionally, and it's Asuric Varnashram. So, therefore, you could be a devotee and following Asuric Varnashram. That's the meaning when we say mixed devotional service. When we say it's mixed, what is it mixed with? You know, it's not that pure devotional service is mixed with some pure devotional service, so we get a real cocktail here, you know, like that. No, we're talking about mixed means it's not devotion. That's why it's called mixed, right? Means if it's pure, we're not distinguishing in the definition of devotional service on whether the person's a madhyam and uttam or on the platform of prema. When we say pure devotional service, we refer to all three. It's generic. We don't make the distinction. Then when we're discussing about the level of development and advancement within pure devotion, then we make the distinctions. So pure devotional service is considered one category, and then there's non-pure, which means it's mixed with our own conditioning. Right? So does that make sense? So in other words, just like cooking is a science, then you go to apply it as a devotee or as a non-devotee. So same, Varnashram is a science. And then you apply it in devotion or you apply it without. So the devotee could be practicing, you know, business or Varnashram or family life that's not connected to Krishna. And that's where the mix is. But his chanting is very nice. His association with devotees is very nice. His commitment to the mission is very good. So that's where the pure part is, right? Because there's only devotional service, which means it's pure, and there is non-devotional service. So we identify pure devotional service when it's predominantly pure, right? So madhyama means it's predominantly pure, but there's still a lot of not pure, right? But it's predominantly pure. Uttam means there's no conditioning, but the purity is, you can say it's pure that one's liberated, but it's not pure in that the devotion in prema is prominent, right? And then prema, that's considered perfect or complete pure devotional service because then it's based on prema. Does that make sense? You know, so what is there is that the person is very absorbed in the kirtan. That's pure devotion. But then when the kirtan's over and then they start fighting with the guy next to him, that's the part that's not pure. So therefore, taking all of that, you say it's mixed. Not that at that time it's mixed. No, it can be pure. You know what I'm saying? That's why you choose association with devotees where they are performing pure devotional service. So the one person, when he chants japa, he's chanting pure. You associate him with it there. But when he takes prasad and he makes a whole scene, you stay on the other side of the room. You know, you pick someone else. You know, you take the purity from there. Is that? Yeah.
Actually, yes, very clear. So we see in the Asura Varnashram, it's also led and managed by very intelligent people.
Yes, no. Asuric simply means it's not devotional. It doesn't mean that they have horns on their head and, you know, they're out there and exploiting everyone, because then it wouldn't be Varnashram.
As well, in the Daivi Varnashrama that was performed in Vrindavan in the association of the six Goswamis, we find the pure Daivi Varnashrama.
Yes, yes.
So, Prabhupada founded an institution that is exclusively, at least in the topmost aim or goal to reach to that level. So, the question is there any particular specific symptom where we can discern between a religious manager and a spiritual leader? between these two categories.
Okay, between a religious manager and a spiritual leader. Okay, well, it's a pious question, because we could also say an irreligious leader, right? You know, just someone who's expert at the administrative duties where they're applying niti, you know? Because, let's say, Duryodhana, he wasn't performing his duties because of dharma. He was very expert at applying niti. Niti, we have to be able to make a distinction here, is that sometimes we don't understand there's differences. Ethics, because we'll take like ethics, morality, religion to be one thing. Ethics means what's right and wrong. You know, morality, you know, is what's good and bad, right? Dharma then is what's the principle of what's good and bad based on the Lord's direction. You understand? So they're different. So in other words, if Duryodhana wants to be the emperor of the world, and he's not, and he has an opportunity by tricking Yudhishthira into a gambling match, and then making more of a trick by using Shakuni, was that right or wrong on ethics? It's right. It worked. You understand? He did what was correct for the political field, because that's where he wants his result. So politically, it was great. It worked. But as far as morality goes, it wasn't so good. And as far as dharma goes, it was really bad. Right? So much of the time, we don't make these distinctions. When we talk about dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, the idea is not just a phrase we use, but we should understand what's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and know the difference and where they fly. Because human life means dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Now, when human life is connected to the Lord, that becomes transcendental. Then those four becomes part of your devotional endeavor. Like that? Does that make sense? So the whole Varnashram system, that someone can be expert at it. So you can have the person, because we'll take it that if he's not pious, he's sinful. But no, sin drops below ethics on one level. It is sinful because it's short term, right? So sinful means you're not considering any rules other than your sentiment, what you feel like, right? Then that will be. But where you're considering the expertise of the skill on how to get it done, that's a higher principle, right? So those people who are expert in technique are considered higher than someone who's just, you know, has feelings towards it, right? But then there's following Shastra. That makes them pious, right? So when you say religious, they're following Shastra, right? Like that. Or following Shastra on the dharmic level. That would be proper. Because following Niti is also Shastric, right? But you wouldn't say that they're religious. You'd say they're ethical, right? So, and then Daiva Varnashram means you see that in Krishna's service. The point is if I have to engage something in Krishna's service, so I'm going to engage my conditioning, right? Now, I can either whimsically engage my conditioning and offer that to Krishna, so I might or might not get a good result, and Krishna may or may not be pleased. But Shastra then says, what is the appropriate endeavors, right? So therefore, following Shastra, then it becomes pious, because you know that the endeavor and the result are good. And since we want to offer the result is for Krishna, that's the definition. That's when it becomes devotional. When there's giving up the result voluntarily for someone else's pleasure, right? Then it's sacrifice, and that someone else being God, then it becomes devotional, right? So then that expertise gives the best result for Krishna, right? Why would we want to be not very expert and give a result for Krishna, right? So that's why it's so strange that the non-devotional techniques are lauded so highly on their own, as if they have some value, right? But the difficulty is they don't have any value until they're connected to Krishna, right? Once you connect them, they're fabulous. But the point is within fabulous, there's fabulous, more fabulous, and most fabulous, right? So they're great. Anything connected to Krishna is wonderful, Right? The little kids are playing in the backyard with rocks and sticks, but they pick up two sticks, they become gornitai, and they pick up some leaves, and they become artik pear. It's glorious. It's just rocks and sticks. Right? So it becomes glorious. Now, within that, you know, the worship, then there are paraphernalia, different things. You can make up your own. Right? You're an Egyptologist. You have so much paraphernalia left over. You could use that. It might, you know, it's like that, but it's still not going to be as good as what Shastra recommends. Because the point is who is Shastra? Right? Krishna. That's the point. He is the Shastra. Yeah. Right? So therefore, saying we don't care for Shastra is saying we don't care for Krishna. You understand? But that caring for Shastra is secondary to caring for Krishna, not as Shastra, but as the person who has given us Shastra for our benefit. You know what I'm saying? So there's always the balance. As soon as we make the strong statement that the form is important, then it has to be balanced with, but the person who that form is being offered to is more important. So that's the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. Everything's important, but there's more important. Right? The material is important or useless. No. Krishna consciousness, everything's important, but there's also more important. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you so much. Actually, in this later explanation, it brings out the symptoms and characteristics of Srila Prabhupada in managing the institution, in the sense that he also instrumented the way of going to the simplicity on the spiritual outlook. Like the Sri Goswamis were dealing with so many details, I mean, like Sanatana Goswami also going to the village and so forth, and dealing with so many managerial duties, worshipping and all that. So, basically, one of the symptoms could be also that the religious manager could tend to expand rather than simplify toward to the simplicity of let's give the example of Krishna give this banyan tree inverted down, right? And all the leaves and the flowers are all the four basic activities of human life and all the mantras and the verses of the Upanishad, etc., etc. But the root is coming to that simplicity, is condensing everything. But technically, I will say, in that aspect, Prabhupada will make the thing very simple, right?
But that simpleness, we have to see as simplicity is... See, there's generally a Western misconception of simple. Simple generally mean undeveloped. But actually, the real simple is very sophisticated. But because it's so sophisticated, it's considered so many things that it is able to work on the principle, and therefore it becomes more universally applicable. So we have to make a distinction in a manager simplifying because he understands the principle. So he gets the principle done and he uses whatever detail is important for that particular situation, what would be most effective. And between making it simple by taking something that could work and get something done very quickly, though later on, without their understanding, it will have a reaction because it was too short term, right? So there's a difference between simple meaning going to universal and long term, and simple meaning going to immediate and short term. So most when they apply it, I was just being practical, means these other things would be consideration, but I'd have to think more, I'd have to make more endeavor, you know, it would take more management. So I went with the simple one, which was the direct one, which got me the immediate results. But then the problem is immediately it falls apart. Because in the Vedic concept, somehow or another 6 months is not considered a long time. You know, and I'm talking nice, you know, the management thing worked for 6 months. That's not bad these days. But we're talking about it always works. But the problem is we will, because I have to consider others' feelings, I have to consider others' position, I have to consider, you know, how to make a plan to organize all that, I will consider that's not practical. So I'm just simplifying down to practical, you know, and getting it done, which true, they are, but as we said, on the principle of ethics. So it worked at the moment. It got it done. But we see as a short time later, it doesn't work. Right? So because why not? Because you didn't consider the nature of that, what the environment's what are the elements of the environment and what the environment's going to transform into. Right? Because the elements remain. The environment is the same elements. And then you add some energy or effort and it transforms. But the elements remain the same. So that means you still have to deal with the situation. Right? So that's the mistake. Now, if someone is so expert at ethic, they're constantly, every moment, dealing with it, and they have the energy, then on one level, it'll work. But then there's always going to be some longer-term things that they're not going to see because they're only dealing in the moment, which is good. They'll be good managers. But the problem is a good manager is expert on that both what's right and wrong and what's good and bad. You know what I'm saying? That's Yudhishthira. It took a little longer, right? But Duryodhana removed Yudhishthira, right? Quite effectively, but short term, only 14 years. Yudhishthira, and he used niti. So it was effective. Yudhishthira used dharma. He removed Duryodhana and 100 brothers permanently. More effective. It takes longer. That's the thing. It takes longer. But the point is longer is not bad, seeing that the soul's eternal. So, you know, it's not a bad concept. Of course, time is limited. So, you know, life is short, all these things. So you don't want to waste your time. You don't want to set such a big thing that it's by the time you get it, it's too late. You know, like that, you know, your perfection on how you deal with your little daughter. You've worked it out now that you're 70, but you can't apply it on your daughter and she doesn't really like you. So, you know, but but if you could get some time to see your great-granddaughter, then you might actually be able to use it. But unfortunately, because your daughter and granddaughter don't like you, you might not get the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? So you shouldn't set the goals too long so that you don't get anything done. So the point is the balance between, just like here, it's the same principle. Balance between dharma and artha, right, is that you have to apply both of them. You know, the long-term plan has to be made, but you have to deal with the long-term plan in the present. But the point is dealing in the present is secondary to the long-term. Does that make sense? So the same principle is there's always a primary and a secondary. Like that. In other words, the primary is the proper mood, the proper understanding, the proper vision, the proper direction, goal. And the secondary is the practical, the situation, the practical service, and the practical result that you're getting. Right? But because we place so much emphasis on the visible result, therefore, we take the secondary as the primary, and the primary. That's just all theory and all just you know, nice stuff, a nice ideology, but it's not real. But the point is no, you have to have both. But the difficulty is you have to know which one's the primary and which one's secondary. That's where basically in all fields of life, the point's missed. You know what I'm saying?
You just define avideya again.
Yeah. Like that. So that's the process. You know, how it works, how it applies. So if we can catch that simple thing applies everywhere in our life. You know, within our sadhana, within the family life, within the occupation, it applies everywhere. We understand, just like the man is, if you ask him why is he working hard and making money, he'll say, I'm doing it for the family. And then when the family complains, he's never at home, he's always at work, and all that, what's going to be his reply? Right? I'm doing this for you. It's always going to be. You know it's going to be that. But their point is great, but what about us as people? Okay, you're making money for your family. You know, you as the provider is making it for the family, but that's all situation. That's all sambandha. But the point of that his family is people and he's a person and they're to interact, he's totally missed the point. Right? So that's why his wife applies for divorce and his kids are out and don't care for him. Right? So it's the same thing. Like we mentioned before, we already mentioned in performing the devotional activity, the technique is important, but the devotional is the point. So in the face, it always comes back that the personal element is the primary, and the supportive technique and environment, that's secondary. Right? It means you have a situation, and then what you do in that situation on the personal level, that's primary. The technique in which you get that done with the situation and the elements available, that's always secondary. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So one can't make that distinction. Then what means, how will we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's why we bring it out so much, because it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The personality, he is the source of all. So Godhead means he's the source of all the manifestations of godness, right? There's so many manifestations. So you have Balaram, you have Mahanarayan, you have the Purusha avatars. So this is all God. So Godhead means the origin of that. Right? So that's the point. We're trying to get back to that. And the Supreme Personality means there's so many other... Paramatma, he is a person. Right? Parabrahman, it's Saguna Brahman. So it's all of Krishna's qualities. It's actually, even though we say impersonal, it's still personal. But the point is why it's impersonal is we're only talking about the quality. He's all-pervading. He's all-knowing. He's all-powerful. But how is that knowing manifest? That's where the person comes in. So just that the God's quality is appreciated, that's the Brahman level, right? But it's personal, but it's Saguna Brahman, right? The Mayavadi concept doesn't even exist, right? But the point is it's the person. So he's created the situations, right? All his energies are working there. Right, so the chit potency is manifesting the internal energy. Chit here meaning the Surup Shakti, right? Means he is God, and his Surup Shakti as his counterpart, as the supreme energy, has manifest the spiritual world, has manifest Braj. In that, then the Sundini, as you know, Purnamasi, Ladini is Radharani. All these different things are going on. Different people are doing different things. All the energies are at work. But what's important? The personal interaction. Nobody cares, right? We identify Sandini, Sandvit, and Ladini, but in the past times, nobody identifies that. You know, nobody worries about that, because the point is it's the personal interaction. Those are just positions. You know what I'm saying? Because look at it. When you, let us say, the child and the mother are interacting, right? There's something there, they're laughing, they're joking, and all this and that. So the actual experience is going on, right? It's actually dynamic. Now, what if the child, the mother stops, or the child stops, and they say, you're the best mom in the world, or you're the best child in the world, right? So it has a taste, but are they interacting as mother and child? You understand? They're not. They're only recognizing that the situation of mother and child is very ideal. But they're not actually dynamically interacting. Does that make sense? So that's why the personality of Godhead, that's the dynamic. And the situations and how he controls and how he's God, that's all the secondary. That's not the primary. So that's why it's important, because it means the spiritual world is a situation.
Therefore, Maharaj, this intensity in relationships, it had to be founded in that in both persons, mother and father, Lord,
yes,
and husband, etc., is Paramatma.
Paramatma is there, but it means it's founded there, but it's actually founded in Krishna as a person. Because Paramatma is in control of it. But we understand he's a person. When we deal with Paramatma as a person, then he's Bhagavan. But when we deal with him as God, he's Paramatma.
from the rasa state, mean, because we don't perceive Paramatma, then we become attached to another person because the presence.
We become attached to the form that is there. So I mean that's another level, because here we're trying to bring out the element of the importance between the personal aspect, the localized, and the Brahman aspect. In other words, you're a great mom, that's the Brahman aspect, right? That you and then how are you a great mom? You take care of everything, you see that the house goes nice, you make nice meals, you know, you take care of us when you're sick. That's the Paramatma aspect, right? But does that make sense? The Bhagavan aspect is that she as a person is affected for that, as the child as a person. That's the actual, that's what they're bringing out here, is that that Prithu Maharaj is a real person, and he cares for his citizens as people. It's not just he's a good king. All right? It's a very subtle point, but it's so extremely important, because generally when you see when devotees are trying to do something dynamic, much anything that's going right is their appreciation of this, and anything going wrong is a lack of understanding of this. It's that simple. Whatever's going wrong in their arrangements because they don't see what's primary and secondary, right? And whatever's going right is because they are. And that's all. You know, that's the point. Krishna consciousness is that simple, right? Because it's simple. Krishna's God. Right? It's not more difficult than that. Like that. So the universal, that's what's easily understandable. But we try to understand this very complicated intelligence. It means pure Vedanta philosophy, the principles of it that are beyond dealing with the conditioning, you can teach to a 3-year-old. I'm not joking. Because it's universal, they'll understand it. Now you get into the sophistication of the applications. That they won't understand because they don't have the experience. They don't have the technique. That you require an adult. But the principles of Krishna consciousness, he's God, we're his servant, we're the soul. You know, Satchitananda. These things, anyone can understand. Right? So this principle that the personal aspect is primary and the field and the technique used on the field is secondary, that anybody can understand. I guarantee you, you could explain it to the kids, it'll be much easier because they don't have any conditioning. They're not that expert at the field. So for them, what are they doing? They're playing. They're interacting as people. They're not very expert in what they do, right? They go to grab something, always knock something over. Why? Because they just see, you know, it's the mood, what I'm going to do. But the adult sees the thing and is very careful not to knock things over. So that's great. But when they get so expert at that, we will say they're dry. Right? The guy is so perfect, everything is so great plan, but he's dry. Why? Because he's made the mistake that the technique, right, is more important than the mood. And then the person is all Bob and all, let's just get together and we'll hold hands, we'll do all these different things and it'll all be nice and it'll all be perfect. Like that, their mistake is they think the technique is not of value. Right? Or the person is, you know, I can't become serious in devotional service until all these things are corrected, until this one does this and that one does management this and temples that. You know, then that means you think the situation is actually the prominent thing. No, it's the mood. You have the right mood. It doesn't matter. You understand? So these are all very, very common applications where we make the mistake of this. We can't tell that there are two things, or we can't tell which one's primary. So it's a very, very simple point. But it is one of the, it's not one of those, it's just a technical, it's all pervading. Right? It pervades everything we do. Like that. Yes.
Maharaj. One question about the terminology you're using. Since Krishna created the Varnashram for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness, how can the term asuric be used in this respect?
How can the Surik be used?
Surik Varnashram. How can you use that term?
It's just that's the term. It's
where did it come from?
I've always heard that that's what the Shastra mentions. I read somewhere. Yeah, he mentions the Surik Varnashram.
I've never heard that. That's why I'm asking.
No, I mean, it's one of those things you don't come across it too much. Otherwise, devotees get too much into that. See, is that there's certain things that Prabhupada will mention it once or twice or a few times, but not too much, because then if it gets emphasized, it'll be used out of balance. So the point, if you go into 11th canto, I think it's, I can't remember what the chapter, but it's, yeah. But there's a verse in the 11th canto, I think it starts off, Sway, Sway. Okay, so it is a known verse. Do you know the number? No, okay. So there it's explaining that piety means it's connected to the Lord. And if it's not connected to the Lord, it's impious. So that's what we mean by asura. It means it's non-devotional. Like, you know, in other words, there's a proper, like say, we understand God, let's say, to be technical, it's not necessarily colloquial usage, but to be technical, deism is atheism. Because you say God's created, made the creation, but he's not in control of it, right? So it means things are going wrong here, you don't know how to work it out, and God's in control, so therefore if bad things are happening, then God's in control, then he's the one making the bad things happening. I don't want to think badly about God, so I deify him and separate him from his creation. So separating God from the creation is actually atheistic, you know, or... You know, generally devotees don't do that as much knowingly, but like, you know, Prabhupada, he's from the spiritual world. He doesn't really know what's going on here in the material world. You know, it's just like he's, you know, from the big house here, and he's, you know, let's say the grand house, let's say. And so he knows all the things and the sophistication, all the social things. But when he goes out in the backyard and the kids are playing in the mud, he can't understand that, you know. So that's deification. It's actually atheism. But the term is used occasionally when you're dealing with the principle. But in application, you generally wouldn't use the term. You wouldn't when the devotee is engaged in the Varnashram system and not, and is only seeing it for the economic development or, you know, some other aspect of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. You wouldn't say that, you know, you're practicing Asurik Varnashram. But the point is that if it's for Krishna, it's Daiva, and if it's not for Krishna, it's Asura. I mean, it's you know, you're liberated or you're conditioned. You know, you have, does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. Why the, means the point is, Asuric means it's not Krishna conscious, that's all. That's why we said mixed devotional service, that's what we're talking about. So No, wait. That means we're taking it on the basis you already understand your point. The discussion was based that the point you're making is already understood. You know what I'm saying? Means that karma yoga means your karma is connected to the Lord. But you have to know is, why is it karma yoga and not shuddha bhakti? Because there is some mix of your own desire. So when we're talking about the devotional inspiration, we call it karma yoga. When we're talking about the weakness, we call it karma misra bhakti. It's the same thing. Karma misra bhakti and karma yoga are exactly the same thing, but it's just whether you're pointing out the glass is half full or half empty. That's all. It's not two different things. So when we're defining this here, we're already working on the principle that one has appreciated that. Now we're trying to make it very clear that how to define what is the pure part and what is the mixed part, so that one can see what is there. In other words, if it's connected to the Lord, that's the pure part. If it's not connected, that's the weakness. But just because something is weak doesn't mean the other part still isn't there. We're not talking about that. Otherwise, if we didn't accept that principle, then the neophyte devotee wouldn't have a snowball's chance in hell of being engaged in devotional service. Because all they do is mixed devotional service. There is no question of anything else. Does that make sense? You know, so, and the Madhyama is situated on the pure platform, but that purity means it's predominantly pure. It means it's beyond You know, I've heard the quote 60%. It's 60% pure, therefore it's identified as pure. So that means 40% is not. Otherwise, why are they only steady? Right? Then, as they get ruchi, that's more. As they get asakti, that's more. Then you would say the percentage of devotion is much higher and the other elements are much less. But it's not until bhava that you're freed from all anartas. But we say anarta nivriti before nishta because it's predominant. But it's, you don't really have anarta nivriti until bhava, right? When you're liberated. And then, even then, you technically don't have anarta nivriti until you've come to the point of purva rag, which is total, complete attachment to Krishna and samadhi. Because then all tinges of anarta, of not being absorbed in the Lord and functioning on the tatastha platform of being neutral towards Godhead, is removed. Then you could say, that's anarta nivriti. So it's always, but it's just like the person just takes up Krishna consciousness and gives up so many, we'll say, yeah, he's giving up so many anartas, he's really advancing. Right? Because he's, you know, he's changed his diet, he's changed his lifestyle, comes to the temple a little more. So we'll say he's given up great amounts. So we're appreciating what's been accomplished. We're not looking at that, you know, the guy still sleeps till 9 o'clock and, you know, this and that and goes out to party with his girlfriend. We're not looking at that. But if we look at that, we have to admit that that's not pure devotional service. It's an anarta. But it's just where you're looking. Does that make sense? So if you're looking at what they're doing for Krishna, that's karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga, or buddhi yoga, if you combine them. But what's not, that's where we'll say is karma misra jnana misra, you know, mixed with yoga, is because there's an attachment there. Does that make sense? So the primary is the connection to Krishna. The secondary is the mix. But the point is, if they're not careful about the mix, because it does have influence, it's not the primary, but it has influence, it can distract. So that's why we're careful about it. So becoming detached from the material world isn't really, it isn't devotional service as such, right? Becoming attached to Krishna, that's devotional service. But because if we're attached to the material world, how much we're attached, we don't become attached to Krishna. Detachment from the world becomes a useful anga of devotional service. It becomes part of devotional service. So the trick is being able to look at these two contradictory elements at the same time. That's why the Gaudiyas have an advantage, because they can deal with these very fine lines. Other lines don't deal so finely. So they just make it very clear. Do this, it's good. You don't do this, it's not good. But we have this overlap of things so greatly because of our philosophy that we're able to accommodate two opposing elements at once and seeing which one's prominent at the time, so which will emphasize, right? If we, the person's not inspired, so you point out the glass is half full, right? But why are you pointing it out? So that they'll leave it at half full and that's good enough? That's what the sentimentalist would be comfortable with. No, we're pointing out that it's half full, so you'd be inspired to fill it complete the other half. But, it, you know, that's what we're trying to do. And you keep it to that, nice. But now if they become proud, no, it's half full, that's good enough. Then we point out, no, it's actually half empty. So that they see it in proper perspective. Right? So they both are used. The point is it's half full and half empty. Because if you don't know it's half full, you don't know how much more is to go. And at the same time, if you don't know it's half empty, you don't know that you have that much more endeavor. So you have to know both. Does that make sense? So here we were discussing the distinction. It was already accepted principle that the engaging the senses in the Lord's service is progressive. That's already been accepted. But here we were defining within that the details that if we don't discern within that, then we may make a mistake of what's prominent and what's not, right? That was the discussion. Okay. Okay.
So therefore, mixed devotional service in the Manashram is not yours. So mixed devotional service
in
no,
the
no, not, not that mixed devotional service would be asuric. That part that's not useful in devotional service, you know, the mistake that the technique itself is important. The man is doing his job, making his money, but he doesn't see it connected to Krishna. That's asuric. But that he takes his family to the temple and, you know, as a grihastha is trying to make them Krishna conscious, that's the devotional part. So he's strong on that aspect, but he's weak on the other. It's not something you use as a common definition, but it was trying to point out is that you have the pure and the impure at the same time if it's mixed. So what's pure is kept. What's not pure, that's what you have to identify and give up. But it's not that mixed devotional service is considered asuric. No, it's daiva. But the point is how much daiva? Why is it only considered a certain amount of daiva? Because there's a certain amount that's not daiva. So what's not daiva is not daiva. You know, that's all.
Usually we have a concept of asuric as something that's against devotional service. That's
it is.
Our concept.
It is. He's making the money just, it's against devotional service. It's against because he thinks him going out and he did the work, he got the money, it's his money. That is demoniac. Right? But the point is in social terminology, because he's doing it for the family, we'll consider it pious. That's why the term pious is there. Is those recommended activities that are not done in the Lord's service are called piety. If it's done in the Lord's service, we call it bhakti. Right? So, generally speaking, it's piety that we use in the Lord's service, but it only becomes bhakti when it's engaged. If it's not engaged, it's just pious. And on the transcendental platform, pious is still demoniac. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It means you have many of these great demons of the universe. You know, they're mentioned in the Mahabharata and that. They're very pious. They take care of their citizens. They do everything very, very well. But what defines them as asuric is that when a problem happens in their plan, they don't turn to the Lord. Right? To use the converse, Indra and all the demigods are called suras. Why? Because when their plan doesn't work, they turn to the Lord. But it doesn't mean they're not neophytes, because when the battle breaks out, they don't think of the Lord. They think of their own prowess. They're demigods, you know. They have great prowess. So they go out and fight. If they beat them, they come back and they maintain that ignorance. But if they lose, then they think something's wrong here. Then they go to the Lord. So that's why they're sewers. But the demons, even if they lose, they don't surrender to the Lord. So the point is the surrender element, that's the daiva, and the non-surrender, that's the asuric. Does that make sense? But the situation, technique, endeavors, results may be exactly the same. So we're not defining here asuric in that meaning, not according to Shastra, not we're meaning the mentality.
Yeah, my difficulty is a little bit because of Srila Prabhupada's practical, his last words were dealing with Varnashram and how he was feeling very compassionate towards human society. And he wanted society come to the platform of Satvagun.
Yes.
And therefore, so
Satvagun means it's based on knowledge, not on the results that you're going to get. So if you're following Varnashram because it's a good economic system, that means you don't understand it. You're not following connected to Krishna, so you're using the modes of passion and ignorance. So that's asuric. You're using it because this is what you're supposed to do. This is your duty. And that duty is to be connected to Krishna, then that's devotional, that's daiva. You know what I'm saying? In other words, semantics over words because you want to use a particular presentation. You have to remember, this is a philosophical discussion. And so we're showing that Varnashram is a body of knowledge called aparavidya, or material knowledge that is only defined as apara because it's used in the service of the Lord. It's not used in the service of the Lord, it's avidya, ignorance. So that's our point. When it's aparavidya, it's progressive. We call it daiva varnashram. When it's not used in the Lord's service, it's avidya or asuric. So the point is devotees are engaged in the process of daiva. But the point is when a manager thinks that I'm the boss and therefore because I said it, therefore everyone has to do it, that's not daiva. He's missing the point. His authority is on how much he protects the devotees, not on how much he throws his weight around. So it has problem. Why? Because it's not daiva. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So it's not trying to get into details, trying to show the philosophical position on which you can test the quality of one's application of devotion through the varnashram medium. That's okay. Well, we're kind of over time, I think. We've already lost half of the audience. So, of course, those who are here, they're more sincere, you know, like that. But I think we should. Huh? Sorry? Oh, that clock's wrong. Oh, we're really over time. Okay. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.